Thank you very much. So it's really nice to be back in Toronto. So I'm going to talk about some joint work with Carlangelo Iverhani, and it's about exponential decay. Correlations for some flows which are piecewise hyperbolic and also contact. So there are some people in the audience who already heard me give this talk, so I apologize to them. It will be a bit boring maybe. So first I want to give some motivation, then I'll try to state the result, and then, sorry? If I put it here, you mean? Yeah, I won't. So then I will state the result, that's better? And finally, if I have some time left, I'll give some hints about how we prove it, and well, maybe Dima and Kolya would want to know more than what I have to tend to say in this talk, but we can probably talk about it later. So what is the motivation? So my dream goal is to prove exponential a decay of correlations for the finite billiard so the flow in dimension 2. So well, you all know what is a finite billiard, I suppose. So you take a 2 torus and then you take some nice, that's not nice. Nice repellers with smooth boundaries, convex. And although it's not clear from the picture, I want to assume finite horizon, so the trajectories will meet obstacles. Each trajectory will meet obstacles, and as well, the trajectory is just a straight line with constant speed until you hit an obstacle, and then you have specular reflection. So the well, the invariant measure the SRB measure is just Lebesgue or Liouville, I mean, call it volume. And what do I mean by exponential decay of correlations? I mean that whenever you take a pair of Hölder, so let's fix the exponent, whenever you take a pair of Hölder functions, if you look at the average of phi composed with the flow at time t times psi, and you subtract the product of the averages, then this tends to zero exponentially fast. Let's say like this, with a prefactor which could depend on the observables. But an exponent, gamma, which possibly depends on psi, but does not depend on the observables, right? So that's the goal. And I don't know how to prove this yet. So what is known about the Sinai billiard? So it's easier to look at the discrete time dynamical system. So if you look at the discrete time version, so the same system, but you look at the map from collision to collision, the Poincaré map, then exponential decay was proved by Lyson and Young. I won't repeat always holder observers because it's always going to be holder observers. Maybe I just say it this time and then I won't repeat it anymore. And much more recently, Kolyachernov got for the flow, so the continuous time, he got stretched exponential upper bounds. And I didn't check the paper recently. I think it's something like square root of t. Is that correct? Yes. And, oh, sorry. Chernov. And as far as I know, that's the best known result for the moment. And I think it's fair to say that the reason why this proof gives a stretch exponential is related to the proof, in the sense that even if you apply the same kind of techniques to a system which mixes exponentially fast, you would not get exponential upper bounds. Okay? So this could be an artifact of the technique used, which cannot give exponential mixing. So that's why that's one of the reasons why I still hope that you can get exponential bounds. Now, in dynamics, going from discrete to continuous, if you're interested in decay of correlations, it's kind of hard. So let me remind you that for the smooth hyperbolic system, so say Anosov. By the way, I forgot to remind you, I mean, this is a hyperbolic dynamical system, okay? We're on a compact manifold, that's all fine. And what is the main problem about this system is that it's only piecewise smooth, okay? So the billiard is only piecewise smooth. And in the easier case of smooth dynamical systems, I mean, the exponential mixing, say for the SRB measure, was obtained by one of these three guys, Sinai, Hoel, Bowen, in the discrete time case. I guess it's Sinai, right? Yeah. And that was, I mean, in the 60s or early 70s, let's say 60s, maybe early 70s. Yeah. Like 73 or something like that. Yeah, 72. Okay. Wow, you're really paying attention. And for the continuous time, so this is Sinai, right? For the continuous time, well, you also get exponential mixing, but you need a additional conditions, like low dimension or something like that. And this was obtained much later by Dima Dolgopiat. So the paper appeared in also in 98, I think. But the preprint was a little bit before. And then the techniques that Dima introduced have been used in many other contexts. So when I started thinking about this problem with Peter Balint, now it's like 7 years ago, something like that. I was very naive, and so the naive idea would be to apply, or let's say generalize, the Dolgopiat, say, oscillatory integral argument to, let's say, infinite Markov partitions. So why infinite Markov partitions? Because the argument of Lysenko-Young uses a tower construction, which is in some sense an infinite Markov partition. Okay, and so unfortunately, this does not work. So I'm not saying that you cannot exploit these techniques when you have infinite Markov partition, but you need some additional information, which is not available for the billiards. Okay, so then Markov partitions don't work. So okay, let's get rid of the Markov partitions. So the slightly less naive idea is to avoid completely Markov partition and to prove that you have a spectral gap for the transfer operator. On a suitable Banach space. So what's a transfer operator? So if you have a discrete dynamical system, the transfer operator is just this operator. Okay, and since we are in a situation where volume is preserved, it's even simpler. It's just composition. So this is a discrete time case. And then what does it mean to have a spectral gap? Let me just draw the picture. It means that you have an eigenvalue 1, which is simple. And the rest of the spectrum is in a disk of strictly smaller radius. And now if you have a continuous time system, well, it's the same, except that instead of having just one operator, you have a semigroup of operators. So again, I mean, it's just going to be a composition in this case. And then the spectral gap picture is a little bit trickier to obtain, because when you look at the generator of the semigroup, the spectral picture that you would like to obtain is like this. Zero, there's a logarithm, right? So zero is a simple eigenvalue. And the rest of the spectrum is in a half plane, which is strictly to the left. And this is more difficult to obtain because it's not enough to say that I mean, the problem that you need to avoid in this case is that you could have accumulation, you could have only isolated eigenvalues of finite multiplicity in a strip, but they could accumulate on the imaginary axis. Okay, so the important word in this blackboard is suitable Banach space, because you need to construct Banach spaces of distributions, right? Because you're composing by a system which is hyperbolic, so there is contraction in some directions and expansion in some other directions, and contraction improves smoothness, but expansion makes smoothness worse. And so these Banach spaces are going to be Banach spaces of not functions but distributions, which have different regularity property depending on the direction that you look at. So, as Calangelo often points out, I mean, 10 years ago, we had no clue of what such Banach spaces could be like. And now we have lots of them, almost too many. We don't know which ones to choose. So let me just remind you briefly some historical pointers about this topic. So the first paper, so there was some important paper of Hans-Henrik Roux in the analytic case, but he didn't really have a Banach space for the transfer operators, okay? So the first paper which realizes this a project is a paper by Blanc, Keller, and Ibrahimi. And this was for the discrete time, another. So they got a spectral gap, but the gap was very tiny because, well, this was the first paper, so they were somehow not using the best approach. And then in the discrete time, Anosov or, well, axiom A. So when I say Anosov axiom A, right, it implies smooth, so at least let's say C1 plus epsilon. The first paper required a bit more. So that much more recently, there were some improvements. So there were a couple of papers by Guezel, Ivahani. I don't remember the dates, but maybe 6 and 8 or something like that. And then I wrote a couple of papers with Masato Tsuji. And that's maybe 7 and 8. And there was also a paper that I had written a little bit before, so I can put it here. And I was ashamed of that paper until recently because it requires an additional assumption, which is that you have smooth, either stable or unstable foliation. Okay, so even in the Anosov case, this is not reasonable because smooth was, well, in the paper it was infinity, and in fact, if you look at it a bit more carefully, you see that it's at least C1 plus epsilon, and this is a very strong assumption even in the Anosov case. And for the billiard, of course, it's completely crazy because the foliation, the stable and unstable foliations of the billiard are only measurable. And then there were also some references in the continuous time Anosov case, so the flows. So maybe I should mention Ivahani and the paper Butterly Ivahani, 2005 or 7, I don't remember the date. And, okay, so that's all very nice. But as I said, the new difficulty for the billiard, I said, but I didn't write it, so let me write it. The billiard, so either the map or the flow, is only piecewise. So we have some candidates for the Banach space, but we have a new requirement. So what is a new requirement? Since now, instead of having a single map that you compose, we now have on our phase space, let's say, finitely many domains and a smooth hyperbolic map on each domain. Let me be a little bit sloppy in the notation and write it like this here too. The new requirement for the Banach space is that if you have a nice subset of your manifold, so maybe you want to have some assumption on the boundary, or I mean, you certainly don't want to allow fractal sets, right? So you want some assumptions. So for every nice domain, we want that the operator, which multiplies an object in a Banach space by the characteristic function, to be a bounded operator. Right? So in other words, our Banach norm needs to satisfy this requirement. Okay? So then we go back to the previous board and we look at all the candidates we had. And unfortunately, I mean, even if you take the simplest possible domain, none of these spaces work. Except except this one. So since I usually do this at the very end of the talk and I don't have the time to explain it well, maybe let me instead explain now what the space was. So what was the space that I used in that old paper? So you have discrete time ANOSOV, which is say, well, in that paper it was infinity, but you can apply the same technique to C1 plus epsilon. And you have smooth, let's say, stable foliation. So what you do, you use charts which trivialize the stable foliation. You can do that with C1 plus epsilon charts because you assume that the foliation is C1 plus epsilon. And then in these charts, you just use a Sobolev space, which instead of having just two exponents, like the Sobolev spaces that we learn about in kindergarten, has two exponents, S and T. So one of these exponents is going to be positive, the other one is going to be negative, actually it's going to be even smaller than minus T. And how do you define the this norm? Okay, so we are already in charts. So you take the, let's say, the Fourier transform. Then you multiply by the by some power of 1 plus the Laplacian, power t divided by 2. So I forgot to say that in the cotangent plane, I use this notation for the coordinates, where psi is a stable variable and eta is an unstable variable. So this is just the ordinary Laplacian, right? But then I do something else. I use the foliated Laplacian, the stable foliated Laplacian, to this negative power. And then since p is not equal to 2, I have to take the inverse Fourier transform. And it's only then that I apply the LP. Okay? So that looks very nice. And then, as I said, this space has this bounded multiplier property. And it also behaves well with respect to hyperbolic dynamics, as I hope you can imagine, because you have smoothness in the unstable cones, but in the stable direction, the total smoothness is T plus S, and T plus S is negative because of this choice here. Ah, and sorry, I forgot to say something. To have the bounded multiplier property, so you need something more. So for the Banach space, HTSP, you get this bounded multiplier property. If T is not bigger than 1 over P, and S is not smaller than minus 1 plus 1 over P. Okay? It uses some work of Trichardt. So okay, so there is some hope. So I have, let me sketch now what is the strategy. So there are four steps. The last one is this dream goal. So exponential decay for the Sinai, two-dimensional Sinai billiard flow. And today's talk is about step number two. What was step number one? Step number one was to prove exponential decay of correlations, or if you prefer, spectral gap, for piecewise hyperbolic maps. So this was done, well, by Lemmers and Liverhani under some assumptions, and by Sébastien Goisel and myself, so 10 and 9 and 10. And so in the two papers that I wrote with Sébastien Goisel, we use these spaces. I forgot to say, maybe there are not so many Germans today, that these spaces are usually called triple spaces. Although people in functional analysis didn't know this little lemma. I mean, we had to prove it in the paper. Okay, so I won't recall all the assumptions that we have in that paper, but I want to emphasize that in that paper, when we say piecewise hyperbolic, the smoothness is piecewise, let's say C2, I mean, it's more or less C1 plus epsilon. Well, let's say C1 plus epsilon. C1 plus epsilon. But when I say piecewise C1 plus epsilon, it's in the strong sense, in the sense of Mwitney, meaning that you have to be smooth all the way up to the boundary of the domain. Okay, so on the closure, of the domains. And people who know billiards, of course, know that this is not going to be true for the billiard. So what about today's talk? Well, today's talk is about exponential decay, or let's say spectral gap, which implies exponential decay, for piecewise hyperbolic flows, which are contact. And again, the smoothness is in the sense of Whitney. And what is separating us from the green goal is to remove this this assumption. So I have some work in progress with Peter Balint and Sébastien Goisel, where we want to remove this assumption in the discrete time case, which means give a new proof of exponential decay for the billiard map. Okay. And the idea is to very briefly, I mean, since I won't have the time to say anything about it later, is to use homogeneity layers and to exploit the fact that to have some Leibniz inequalities, it's enough to assume Sobolev type smoothness, especially if you are willing to lose a bit of regularity in the estimate. And if this, so this has been done, right? This has been done. The paper is on the archive. This is work in progress, and this, as I said, is still just a go. Okay, so now let me try to state our result with Calangelo. So we have a model. So it's in dimension 3. And this is because there is an assumption of bunching, which appears when you use these techniques when the foliation is not smooth. So this assumption is always satisfied in dimension 3, and there are other less important reasons. And now we have a flow, let's say measurable flow, which is maybe not defined on all M, but it's defined on a nice subset of M, so I hope I have time to say a little bit more, but essentially it's a union of flow boxes, finite union of flow boxes. Okay. And what I assume about this flow is that it's piecewise smooth and piecewise hyperbolic, so let me say piecewise cone hyperbolic. I should have used this terminology before, because when you have piecewise smooth systems, I mean, that's the cone hyperbolicity is the best way to assume, to state the hyperbolicity. Piecewise, C2 cone hyperbolic. So I hope I will have a little bit of time to explain better what this means, but let me again insist that in the sense of Whitney. I want to assume that it preserves contact form, a smooth contact form. So this implies that it preserves volume. Okay, and if you don't know what is a smooth contact form, you can just imagine that in some Darboux coordinate, this is the form that is preserved. Then you need to assume that the flow is ergodic. In some previous versions of this talk, I was assuming mixing, but then Calangelo realized that just like in the smooth situation, if you are contact and ergodic, then you are automatically mixing. And then there are two assumptions, which I didn't mention when I was discussing the discrete time result, but which also were present there, which is a sub-exponential complexity and transversality. So transversality of what and what? So there are stable and unstable cones, smooth families of stable and unstable cones, and there are also Poincaré maps, and the transversality assumption is that the image of the boundary, so di is a three-dimensional domain, and the lower part of di, the transversal, two-dimensional transversal to the flow, we call it oi. So pij of the boundary of this lower boundary has to be transversal with the stable cone. Ah, yeah, I didn't explain what is sub-exponential complexity. So let's express it in terms of the Poincaré map. So we have an initial partition for the Poincaré map, which is a partition given by the OIs. And you can refine this partition by using the dynamics, right? So you have this, let me pretend that I have a two-dimensional manifold, I have an initial partition, and then I refine it by using the dynamics. And of course, what we don't like is that is when the number of neighbors of a point grows too fast. And that's exactly what this assumption avoids. So we look, for example, BS for beginning, at the maximum number of neighbors of a point for the partition which has been refined n times by the dynamics. And we want this to grow sub-exponentially. Well, let me write it. So I look at the dnb, I take the log 1 over n, and this has to be smaller than 0, and the same if you look at the partition, at the images of the elements of this partition. Okay, complexity at the end. So I didn't really define properly what I mean by piecewise cone hyperbolicity, except by making this picture. So yes. Yeah. So yeah. So maybe I can explain this a little bit better. So we assume that we have finitely many flow boxes. So what is a flow box? So you have a transversal to the flow, a surface, which has nice piecewise C1 boundaries. And then you have a ceiling function. Well, actually, it's never zero. Which is C2, okay, and DI is actually just the suspension of this surface under this ceiling function, okay, and and the flow is just, I mean, the usual, I mean, in some coordinates you can arrange that it's just a usual translation. And then you have to worry about what happens when you go from one flow box to the next, right? So this is coded in the Poincaré map, which I already used. Now let me try to explain better what it is. So the Poincaré map goes from OI Pij to Oj, okay, and it's also C2. And this point, and one thing is that I should warn you about is that I don't assume that the top boundary of Di intersects the lower boundary of Dj, right? I mean, this includes what you call the collision map, right? Okay, so what you can imagine is that, well, maybe sometimes it could be like just underneath, but it could be that you have this other box here, and so you're just jumping from there to there. And what is missing here is the cones. So you can express the hyperbolicity with a flow, but you need to put some lower bounds. And then you have the usual property that the unstable cones, let me be a little bit sloppy here, are mapped strictly inside themselves by forward iteration, and the stable ones. This is a little bit sloppy, right? But if you want to write it carefully, then it becomes kind of heavy. Okay, so I hope it's more or less clear. And otherwise, you can look at the paper. And I think I still have 5 minutes left, so let me try to explain a little bit more about the argument. So I told you about this space HTSP. I told you about the space and how it works when you have a smooth anosov diffeomorphism, which has a smooth stable foliation. So in the second paper that I wrote with Sébastien Guézel, we removed the assumption of smoothness of the foliation. And how did we do that? Well, the idea is that instead of working with charts which trivialize the foliation, which are smooth. We work with a family of smooth, and this means C1 plus epsilon, and some additional conditions, which means I don't have the time to discuss too much, charts, which do not trivialize the foliation, because such charts don't exist, but which are compatible with the stable cones, okay? So we have these stable cones, and what we require of the charts is that they define some foliation, some fake stable foliation, which is everywhere compatible with a stable cone. And then the norm is defined as before, except that since we don't have a single chart, we have to take the supremum over all admissible charts. And of course, there's a lemma that we had to prove, which is invariance of the families of cone admissible charts. So that was in VG2. And the proof is Adamard-Perron, except that it's, if you really want to carry it out in a way which is exploitable, you have to be very careful and explicit. Okay, so that was for the two-dimensional... sorry, and I forgot to say, this is where the bunching is important, right? Just like for smoothness. So this was for the two-dimensional map. So now what do we do? Well, we add for the flow. Well, we add the flow direction. Okay. So basically, it's going to be as before. Okay, except that you have to add the flow direction. And then, so that's about the space. And then, what about the technique? How do we implement the Dolgopiat argument? Well, we use the version which is in the paper of Calangelo about contact ANOVA flows, paper in ANOVA math. And one of the important ideas of that paper. So I already told you that we have to consider the resolvent. Is that we are going to work? We have to consider, the generator, the semiflow. That we are going to work with the resolvent of this generator. Okay, so Z is this spectral. Parameter, right? And we get this this picture. And the very important property of this resolvent that we use is following Laplace transform expression. So remember, L is still on the board is a transform operator for the flow. And already in the papers of Calangelo, the fact that we are integrating along the flow direction was extremely important, because to get some bounds on the essential spectral radius, what we use are some Lazotta-York inequalities. And what is a Lazotta-York inequality? It's an inequality such that in the right-hand side, you have two terms, one which is a contraction, and the other which is compact. And the compact one can be extremely big, you don't care about it, but it has to be compact. Okay? So here we can use some nice compact embedding properties. If T prime is strictly smaller than T, Q prime is not bigger than Q, and S prime is not bigger than S, then you have the compact embedding between HTSQ and HT prime S prime Q prime. The problem is that already in Calangelo's paper, although he was not using exactly this kind of space, I mean, the compact term becomes compact only after integrating along the time direction. And for us, it was the same, except that it was even worse, in the sense that the bounded term was not bounded. This is exactly when we proved this, the three-dimensional version of the invariance of Conan miscible charts. We have a little problem in the sense that we lose smoothness in the time direction. And so even the bounded term in the new paper, even the bounded term becomes bounded only after integration. Okay, so that's the Lazotta-York part, that's somehow the easy part, and then there is a Dolgopiat estimate. So for the Dolgopiat estimate, it's inspired from the Calangelo's paper. So what was Calangelo doing in his paper? He was integrating along small pieces. Well, it was unstable actually for some duality reason, which is not important here, along small pieces of stable manifolds. Okay. So here we are in trouble because we don't have nice stable manifolds. So what do we want to do? Well, we would like to integrate along a fake fake small piece of stable manifold. So they have to be in the stable cones, but they need to satisfy another property, which is that they have to be in the kernel of the contact, I think I didn't give a name to the contact form, in the contact form which is preserved by the, I think I'm over time, I will stop now. In the kernel, sorry, they have to be in the kernel of the contact form which is preserved by the form. So I think I stop now. Thank you.